Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we have Janice Jin. She's a lecturer over at UH Manoa Department of Journalism and also former news director over at KITV. And Perry Arrowsmith, he's the president at the Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs. And they're both here to talk about a news desert project that this just was released. I want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Thank you.
Mahalo for having us.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, I think for me, at least, this is, or at least for you both, it's first time on Bite Marks Cafe. So I'm really happy to have you both on. And, you know, I do cover sort of the technology side of news. And over the years, it's been an interesting observation seeing how various, you know, platforms, whether it's social media or other forms of receiving, you know, information, has really changed the environment, the landscape of the news environment. And before we get into, you know, the report and what it reveals, I want to give you both a chance to kind of do a quick intro of yourself. And maybe, you know, we'll start with Janice. Since Janice, you've been the news director at KITV, you're teaching journalism. I mean, you kind of want to stick around in this kind of line of work, right?
Well, I really like the business of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I really do. So, but I've been around broadcast journalism for like over 40 years. So I've been at KITV. I was at KITV for 5 years. And prior to that, I've worked in, you know, all kinds of markets and watched this business of broadcast journalism evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what concerns me the most about whether it's in Hawaii or across the nation, where we are having news deserts. It's very concerning to me.
So in your definition, you know, obviously, you know, it's pretty clear what a news desert is, but what sort of specific kinds of, I guess, delivery mechanisms do you see being less available? Because, you know, with the loss of some of the, let's say, television broadcast media, I mean, there's still a mm-hmm. proliferation of stuff that's being made available, whether it's trustworthy or not. I mean, it's still there. It's, you know, you have all the, you know, posts on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I mean, and there's these quote unquote influencers. You wouldn't consider them news sources, do you?
Well, you know, that's what's scary. Because now I teach at the university with a bunch of college kids,
mm-hmm.
I let them tell me where they get their news from.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're getting their information from Instagram, and I ask them, how do you know what you're getting is truth? How do you know it's reliable? Like, oh, they really don't know. They just read it. And like, oh, this is kind of disconcerting. But I think broadcast journalism, that broadcasting is never going away.
Mm-hmm.
It's how the industry and broadcast industry uses its technology, as you say, to get that news out in a reliable and authentic way. And that we have to convince, I think, the population to understand when they're seeing reliable information and when they're seeing not reliable information.
Yeah, right. Now, Perry, tell us a little bit about the Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs. And you're the newly elected president. The organization, and I call it HIPAA for short, but what is it that it is most interested in with respect to this News Desert report?
Sure. So I've just taken over as the president of the board of the Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs, and it's a volunteer board. HIPAA's been around for about 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're very proud to have been Hawaii's first nonprofit, nonpartisan, independent research organization. Our mission's pretty straightforward. We want to provide research, analysis, and provide recommendations on policy issues facing Hawaii. Our board is really interested in the civic future of Hawaii, and what better way to assess the civic health of our state than to look at the current state of its media landscape. So several members of our board wanted to tackle that big question, and they wanted to see what media what the media landscape looked like here and now in 2025, and that was the genesis of this report.
So was it something that was kind of ideated amongst the board that they wanted to actually do a study on the news landscape here? And then, you know, as a result of some kind of initial funding, the report was created?
Yeah, so I have to give credit to a particular member of our board, Barbara Tanabe. Barbara has been in the news media landscape here in Hawaii for decades. She carries a wealth of experience, and I think she recognized that the landscape has shifted, and there has not been to date a real effort to take stock of how the media landscape has shifted. So she was among the members of our board, I think the biggest mover and shaker when it came to organizing our efforts.
And you're right. I mean, the fact that the report came out and it just launched recently, right? Was it last month?
It was last month.
Yeah, that had the official launch. But the fact that there's a news desert has been something that we've been sort of watching over the course of like maybe even the last decade, right? So people have been watching, from newspapers, right? You have the Honolulu Advertiser, you had the Star Bulletin, and then they kind of like merged, and then you had a whole bunch of independent newspapers that were around, and I don't think you can find many independent newspapers at all nowadays. And of course, you had all the television stations, and they were all independent, and now, you know, they've all sort of like merged behind the scenes. This has been going on for the last decade, but I guess to your point, Perry, nobody's really written a report, sort of comprehensive report, about that fact. Is that a correct statement?
Yes, and that's absolutely right. I mean, we took a very comprehensive approach when putting this report together. And just for perspective, I mean, we've been tracking the count of active newspapers in our state since about 1960. And I'd say in the early 80s, we reached a peak of about 50 active newspapers. But if you look at the state of just how many newspapers, active newspapers we have in Hawaii today, it's currently at its lowest point since 1960. It's less than 20 active newspapers here in our state today. But I mean, that still sounds like a lot of newspapers, but that also factors, you know, smaller newsletters.
Right. And some of these are like not even dailies, right? I mean, they could be a weekly.
Absolutely. A weekly, a monthly. Yeah.
And Janice, I do want to get your sort of firsthand knowledge about the experience some of the broadcast stations have gone through with the change of ownership and the kind of combination of ownership and how that has had sort of an impact. So what we'll do is we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Janice Jin and Perry Arrowsmith about the News Desert Project. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Ulupono Initiative and Ruby Tuesday Hawaii.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum, and if you're just joining us, we're talking to Janice Jin, lecturer over at UH Manoa in the Department of Journalism, and also she's a former news director over at KITV, and Perry Arrowsmith, he's the newly elected president at the Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs, and I've got them on here talking about the News Desert Project, and Janice, you know, you've lived through a lot of the consolidations that have been going on and, kind of bear witness to the fact that the stations all might still exist doing their news broadcast, but the amount of sort of different news sources has really kind of collapsed, right?
Well, it has. I think that, when you compare newspapers to broadcast, I think you're really doing apples and oranges. Mm. The desert in the broadcast area is really about competition and consolidation and cost. I call it the three C's. Mm-hmm. So the consolidation, every major television station in this market has changed ownership. If not once, twice, sometimes three times, sometimes four times. So what we have today are basically three big time stations owned by very big conglomerations.
Mm-hmm.
And what is what? And but you know, they also own these one groups of TV stations will own one, two, or three, or four stations in the marketplace. And so what I say is the consolidation is great. It means that, you know, there's more avenues to get news out there. And so there was some criticism like, you know, we're expanding our operation, we're adding streaming. You talk about technology. Technology has created more avenues to get the news out there. And my question about technology was, while we increase access, does that improve the quality of what we're being told? Or are we just repeating the same thing at a different time slot?
Well, I think that is
having
the case.
Having worked intelligence, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can run the 6 o'clock news, and then it runs again at 9.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same news. There's no added feature to it. There's no added anything. So people get information, but it's not a lot.
Right. And
that's the desert.
And then when you talk about other technology forms, whether it's on, let's say, Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, it's basically repurposing, you know, the mm-hmm. content that you've already created for the 4 o'clock or the 6 o'clock news broadcast.
Or now vice versa. People are trying to create it for their YouTube audience and turning around and putting it on the air.
Right.
I've seen that trend happening most recently across the country.
Yeah, and it is somewhat disturbing, and it is, you know, lessening the amount of content that's getting out there. The other thing that, you know, I'd love to hear your comment on is the fact that as these companies grow bigger and bigger and bigger and merge, we're sort of witnessing another interesting dynamic going on with CBS and Paramount and their, you know, interest in buying Warner Brothers, and you know what they've had to do to try to do that, and the political, you know, impact to the degree where it's really having a negative impact on the quality of the news. I mean, it was all over the news about how, you know, a story about the prisoners, you know, getting put into a prison camp in El Salvador that was cut from 60 Minutes.
And it was amazing, amazing story. Here's the deal with consolidation. Today, there are probably maybe a handful, I'm talking, if you have all five fingers, there's probably about five, no more than 10 major companies that are running most of the TV stations across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the largest players are here in Hawaii.
That's
and
right.
Let's not, you yep. know, let's. I kind of tell my class, I go, you know, you need to look deeper into these companies and what they stand for and how they act with the public. So, you know, I don't want to call names out, but I'm saying there are broadcasters who are not great broadcasters. They have an agenda.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
The question is, do they take that agenda and force their affiliates? They own them now. They're not renting from them. They own you, and they tell you, do they tell you what to say?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a notorious case of that, which I can say in this market because we don't have anybody owned by them, is Sinclair Broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
where they required all of their 160 stations or so across the country to read the same editorial written by corporate.
Yep.
They had the anchors read it on there. I was like, oh, my God. So, you know, this is the danger of the consolidation.
Right. I mean, through the consolidation and having sort of one corporate sort of overlord, you control that and you control everything that gets delivered downstream of that.
And the downstream is so big when Sinclair can own 160 stations, that's 160 markets across the country. That is over half of the country is hearing that same editorial.
Now, Janice, you know, I can see where the professor in your class is getting all, you know, like really excited and passionate about this. How do the students react? I mean, you know, I mean, I don't want to, you know,
well,
I don't want to characterize Gen Zs, but I mean, you know, do they feel like, you know, they're going to be kind of like guinea pigs in this experiment?
Well, kind of. I don't know. I like to say 6'7", you know, so that makes them
Yeah,
laugh.
Yeah, 6'7". So, okay.
But I want them, because I tell them in my class, in the introductory class, so I go, I'm just telling you about media writing and all the different media things. I want you to become a critical thinker.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to want to watch the news. So part of my assignment for my class is they have to watch local news twice a week, the mm-hmm. same show, the same station, and then keep a journal of what they see, what conclusions they come up with. And most, a lot of them have said in their final papers that they never used to watch news. They would use it as background noise because their parents had it on, and now they're kind of into it. And I'm like, wow, okay, if I made a news consumer, then I'm really happy.
Are they into
it? So I don't
it?
Know where the generation, they tell me they get everything from Instagram.
Yeah, and so my question is, are they into it because they've got it, you know, they're getting some value from the news content that's being delivered, or are they getting it because they see perhaps the crack, you know, the crack in the armor that is now being displayed in front of us as a result of, you know, some of these sort of large corporate takeovers?
I think that they're finally, well, I think those who are enlightened are seeing that there are things that they don't know, which is what I think education is for. Is for me, my job is to tell you what you don't know and teach you about it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of amazed at it. They're like, oh, look, I didn't know that. I go, that's why it's great to do journalism. This is great, a great study. This is what you should come away with, is understanding what you need to look for. I don't tell them what to look for. I just say, understand what's the story behind the whole CBS, Paramount original deal.
Mm-hmm.
Forget the Netflix thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole thing, I go, there's an underpinning of that. There's an underpinning of what goes on and what other companies that are trying to have consolidation. And they're all playing with the administration and the FCC. So they're all concerned about it. I go, so these are things that they didn't know about and didn't think to know about. So I think they're kind of amazed, going, wow, there's more to life than, you know, Katy Perry dancing. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right. No.
Taylor Swift. Sorry, no. I guess I'm dating myself.
No, I'm in the same kind of like generation, so don't worry about it. Perry, so with, you know, I do want to ask you, Perry, about what does the report ultimately say? I think it's kind of obvious, but, you know, as a result of the report saying what it does, what is it that we can do about it? So, you know, with that in mind, I want you to kind of hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Janice Jin and Perry Arrowsmith. We're talking about the News Desert Project. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Chaminade University.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the News Desert Project, and we're talking to Janice Jin. She's a lecturer over at UH Manoa at the Department of Journalism and former news director over at KITV. And Perry Arrowsmith, he's a president or newly elected president over at the Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs. And Perry, the News Desert Project, it's out. It's pretty much saying, you know, kind of like what Janice is saying. So how would you characterize, you know, what it is that the News Project, the News Desert Project is doing? Who's the audience that you wanted to get out to? And what is it that you would like to see happen as a result of the project's, the report's launch?
Well, I think first and foremost, our audience for this report is anybody here in Hawaii who is concerned about the civic future of our state. And if you believe that the media functions as a critical check on power, then you should be concerned about what our report is finding out in real time. Our first report, the report that's on our website now, it's acknowledging the simple fact that the future is never what it used to be. Like Janice said, more and more folks are consuming social media, or they're relying on social media to get their news. One example that I was thinking about right when we were having this discussion is Hungry Hungry Hawaiian on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
They have over 283,000 followers on Instagram. that I think that's about 10 times the amount of followers that Hawaii Public Radio has mm-hmm. on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
They are a great example of just the fact that folks are craving news. It's mm-hmm. just a question of how they consume the news. So when we use the term news desert, what we're talking about is perhaps how older forms of media are struggling in this new environment. The media landscape is evolving, and there are certain, I guess, media, to use the metaphor, there are certain plants that can thrive in this new news desert. So we've tried to identify how media can continue to thrive in this new environment, and we've done that through two ways. First, we've acknowledged that there's new ways of generating revenue for media organizations, and number two, there are new partnerships that media organizations can look towards when they're trying to figure out how to continue providing quality local news coverage.
And does the report sort of indicate directions that some of these sort of new ideas, news concepts can take in order to survive and be sustainable?
Yes. So the report itself, towards the end of the report, we identify a series of resources for supporting local news. There are a number of, startups, tech companies, nonprofits, philanthropic foundations nationally that are launching programs to support local news.
Mm-hmm.
They provide grants. They can finance, or they can help provide funding through grants for individual journalists to conduct their own reporting. There's a growing source. There is a growing number of organizations that want to support local news media coverage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, Janice, do you think that with your access to students and talking about journalism, there's interest in perhaps doing some sort of like a news hackathon or something, or news, something that brings people together to ideate around some new ideas, new concepts that might be prototyped so that...
I think there are a lot of journalism-interested people. I'm not sure if it's students who would be great at a hackathon. I would love to have academics in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the academic voice is not in... Academics that might have knowledge of like grants and programs, things that are going on out there in other communities that we should try to create here. I think that would be, ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't think about a hackathon. That's such a good idea, Bert.
Okay, well, I'll give you a call and bug you about it.
Yeah.
Now, with the report released, and Perry, you kind of hinted at some suggestions as to what might be next. Is there a future or life after this sort of first launch of the report? Is there additional, let's say, new insights that might come out as a result of perhaps a phase two of the News Desert report?
Absolutely. The first phase was intended for us to identify the nature of the problem, the nature of the news desert, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The next phase is going to be us looking into how news media organizations can survive in this new environment, and how they can not just survive, but how they can thrive and perpetuate Hawaii's rich history of quality journalism. So we're currently in the planning stages for that. We teased at that phase a little bit towards the back of this report when we talked about potential partnerships with other national startups, tech companies, nonprofits, and philanthropic foundations with an interest in Hawaii's journalism and the future of journalism. We'll be working through that next phase over the course of this year. We'll be reaching out to those organizations I just mentioned, but we'll also be engaging with local media organizations to figure out how they can implement some of the strategies that we've identified.
Well, and that's a good point, Perry, because I'm curious to what extent does your, let's say, role at HIPAA and the HIPAA organization take on this kind of next phase, as well as tactical things that might need to happen, in the news landscape. I'm venturing to say that isn't that a little bit beyond the scope of what HIPAA would do, and would HIPAA now look at another, let's say, other kinds of reports to release. To what extent do you see HIPAA really helping push sort of the ideas around ideating, around, having a more, more prolific sort of news environment?
Well, that's just it. I mean, we are not a news media organization,
mm-hmm.
but we are a research. We do provide research. We do conduct analysis, and we do provide recommendations with the research and analysis that we conduct. So that's where, like I said, in this first report that we've issued, we've identified ways that news media organizations are able to partner with national startups, tech companies, philanthropic foundations, how they're able to partner with those groups and actually, bring in new journalists one example I'll bring up is the New York Times has a local investigations fellowship. And through the first phase, we've looked into how one media organization, Civil Beat, was able to take advantage of that program.
Mm-hmm.
I think we want to break mm-hmm. out those examples in more detail in the second phase of our report. ProPublica in the past has partnered with Star Advertiser. We didn't get to talk about how that was successful in this report, but we'd like to break that out further in our next report. I think there are a lot of great examples that we didn't really get to dive down into in this first phase that we want to expand on in our next report. But with all that said, by the way, HIPAA is not just focused on this News Desert report. We're also looking into other potential topics in real time.
Yeah, I would imagine that HIPAA has a pretty wide swath of topics that they can cover that go, beyond just the news landscape. So it'll be interesting to see some of the additional reports that come out from HIPAA. And Janice, so what I'm hearing Perry say is basically you, as the UH connection, has to come up with the innovative programs that get people to ideate around some of the new formats that might be prototyped.
I think the other thing that I wanted to mention to Perry is on that you should look into Civil Beat's partnership with Hawaii News Now. Because if you think, they're doing really great work, they're also using the support of broadcast. So how those two come together is an interesting phenomenon. They used to be partners with KITV, and then they changed.
Well, we'll definitely kind of pay attention to a lot of that. And this is a topic I'd like to continue to have a dialogue mm-hmm. on. So we'll probably have you guys both on. Now, Perry, where can we find the News Desert report?
Yes. So if folks want to read the report itself, I'd invite them to check out HIPAA's website. It's HIPAA.org. And once they enter that URL at the very top of the webpage, they'll be able to access our report. It's available as a link.
Very good. Janice Jin is a lecturer over at UH Manoa Department of Journalism, former news director over at KITV. Perry Arrowsmith is the president at the Hawaii Institute for Public Affairs. I want to thank you both for joining me today. And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the future of tech in Hawaii. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on... you'll find what we'll do next week on the future of tech in Hawaii. Of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. In the meantime, you stay safe, you stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.